Remembering the why of your bedrooms. The average number of bedrooms in a U.S. home currently stands at about 3.3, a number that has been creeping up over the years. This increase has come in spite of the fact that the number of family households with children under the age of 18 living at home has been dropping significantly over the past few decades. From around 56% of all family households in 1970 to about 43% in 2015. How many bedrooms do you have in your home? Think of the space they take up. Minimize them all, and you'll have a big percentage of your house already done. To begin, think about your purposes for the bedrooms in your home, just as we did for the living and family rooms. The master bedroom is probably mostly for rest and intimacy with your spouse, though you may also use it for such things as reading or study. If you have kids, they too need calming rooms to go back to for downtime, for play, to do homework, and to sleep at night. Similarly, if you have a guest room, this is a place you can offer your overnight guests to relax in private and get a good night's sleep while they're away from home. As you focus your attention on minimizing your bedrooms, look at the possessions and ask yourself often, do we need this item? Does it help the room accomplish one of its purposes by providing service, beauty, or meaning? Remembering the purpose of your bedroom won't automatically remove the clutter, but it will provide a framework for your decision-making process. For example, in the master bedroom, does the television on your dresser promote rest or intimacy, or does it detract from these goals? We'll be getting to that one in greater depth soon. Is the pile of magazines or books in the corner helpful to you? Does that cluttered nightstand or top of your dresser bring you calm and relaxation? Use the same evaluation process for the kids' bedrooms, if any, in the home. In your young son's bedroom, are there so many toys scattered about that he can't find the toy he really wants to play with and might even trip over the debris on the floor and hurt himself? Is your daughter getting in the bad habit of turning on the TV in her room while she's studying? Does an unfinished project in your teen's room give him a sense of burden about what he still needs to do? And then there's your guest room. Have you placed a piece of furniture in this room not because an overnight guest will need it, but because you couldn't think of any other place to put it? Are you using the guest room closet as overflow storage for things you can't fit somewhere else but might need someday? And if so, does that excess storage keep your guests from feeling welcomed and valued? Step-by-step minimizing for your bedrooms. I'll be getting to closed closets in the next chapter because they present some special challenges of their own. Right now, we're learning how to minimize everything in a bedroom except the closed closet. As you attack your bedroom's clutter, be thoughtful, be methodical, and be confident you'll get it done. Step 1. Relocate things that don't belong where they are. Are there items in a bedroom that you should keep elsewhere? For example, maybe a pile of paperwork belongs in your home office instead of your master bedroom. Or some books belong on a shelf in the family room instead of on a nightstand. Or some toys belong in the basement instead of your child's bedroom floor. Put them where they belong before focusing on what's left in the bedroom. Step 2, clear the floors. Leave nothing on the floors except for furniture, and I'm going to challenge you on that in a minute. Think beyond picking up dirty clothes. Consider also storage containers, book piles, exercise equipment, or items placed in your bedrooms temporarily that have begun to make themselves at home long term. Which of these things can you throw out, donate, or sell? As you declutter other spaces in your bedrooms, such as drawers, you will find more space to store some of the things that are littering your floors. You may need to stack some items out of your way temporarily until the space becomes available for them. Step 3. Clear surfaces. Minimize items on your dressers, nightstands, and any shelving in the bedrooms. These might include souvenirs, decorations, crafts, plants, piles of paper, and photos. You don't need to eliminate everything from these surfaces, of course, but too often a flat surface becomes a magnet for clutter, so don't hold back in your removal process. Keep out your most treasured items, those items that help you relax or recall happy memories. Remove anything from your sight that distracts you or stirs up anxiety, regret, or guilt. Step 4. Decide how to use closets and drawers. I know some people who store all of their clothes in the closet and have eliminated the need for a dresser. And I know others, without closet space, who choose to store clothes in dresser drawers. But one thing I have found to be consistently true: the fewer clothes you keep, the more options you have for storing them in an uncluttered manner. If you plan to use drawers, define each of their purposes. In my house, I keep one drawer for underwear and socks, one drawer for workout clothes, and one drawer for warmer wear, mainly sweaters. Everything else I store in my closet. My wife has a similar strategy. Step 5. Simplify your bed linens. Somewhere in your home, perhaps in a linen closet, you keep your store of sheets and blankets. Pull them all out and sort through them. Throw out all that are in poor condition or that you no longer need. This is an ideal opportunity for using the minimalism accelerator of eliminating duplicates. Do you really need more than 2 sets of sheets per bed? One in use and one either in storage or in the laundry? We own just 1 set of bedding for each bed in our home. We just wash and return the same day. A few extra blankets may be useful on those chilly nights, but if you've accumulated more than your household would ever use at one time, the extras can go. Step 6. Pare down your decorations. I mentioned in the last chapter about the importance of choosing wisely the decorations we keep in our home and on our walls. Extend the same philosophy to your bedroom environments. Reject decorations that simply match the colors of a bedspread. Choose instead to portray images with meaning that direct your attention toward things that matter. You will free up both physical space and mental focus. Step 7. Get rid of furniture, if possible. Prior to being introduced to minimalism, Kim and I had 5 pieces of furniture in our room: a bed, a dresser, 2 nightstands, and 1 large armoire upon which our television sat. The armoire was filled with my clothing, while my wife stored hers in the dresser. We also shared the closet, her clothes on the left side, mine on the right side. As we began decluttering our bedroom, we removed many of the clothing items from our closet, dresser, and armoire. We also removed our television. Because of those changes, without any inconvenience whatsoever, we were able to remove the large armoire from our room, instantly creating a great deal of new openness in the room. Maybe you have a piece of furniture, or more than one, you can remove from your bedroom or one of the other bedrooms in the house. Nothing else will make as big an impact in minimizing a bedroom as getting rid of furniture. Step 8. Make the best use of under-the-bed space. The problem with most under-the-bed spaces is that they quickly become places for hoarding more and more unnecessary things. Our closets are full, our drawers are full, and the next available space is under the bed. So that space quickly collects countless items seemingly never to be seen again by human eyes. Let's be clear, that's not what I'm talking about when I encourage you to use the under-the-bed space. I'm talking about being intentional with the items you keep there. I use the space under my bed for storing useful items that I do not want to leave out in the open. Under my side of the bed, I store the books I'm currently reading. This keeps them within arm's reach, but does not leave clutter on a nightstand. Actually, there's no nightstand there. I removed the one from my side of the bed, the second piece of master bedroom furniture we discarded. I also keep some business files under my bed. My wife keeps a few boxes of keepsakes under her side as well. We live in a house with no basement or attic, so using that space under the bed has been helpful to us. Rethinking the bedroom TV. As I mentioned, my wife and I got rid of our bedroom television. It was the single biggest step we took toward improving rest and intimacy in our bedroom. And because of our experience, I hope that you'll strongly consider making the same decision. What we think about first in our day and what we think about last really matters. Every morning begins with a clean slate and brand new opportunities. We would be wise to think carefully about whether we want television producers to decide what thoughts to fill our minds with as we start our day. The evening provides a valuable opportunity to meditate and assess our day. Unfortunately, many people sacrifice this opportunity for the sake of televised entertainment. Not having a television in the bedroom also encourages getting more and better sleep. We know that Americans, on average, watch an incredible 35.5 hours of television per week. And this shows us how hard it is for us to turn off the TV at any point in the day, including bedtime. Not only does television in the bedroom keep us up later at night, but watching television before bed also disrupts our sleep cycles. With no television in the bedroom, you and your spouse will have more conversations, some of the most important conversations of your day. In his book, Two in a Bed, social scientist Paul Rosenblatt said, "Bedtime is not just about sleep. It is about renewing and maintaining the couple relationship. It can be the one time when partners learn what has been going on with one another, plan, make decisions, deal with disagreements, solve problems, provide necessary information, and put words to their realities. That kind of bedtime contact is compromised when the television is on." According to some studies, couples who keep a TV in the bedroom have sex half as often as those who don't. Why? Probably because there are over a million things more stimulating for a woman than a man watching ESPN's SportsCenter. If you ask me, the opportunity for more intimate encounters should be reason enough to get rid of a bedroom TV. But if it isn't, here are even more benefits we discovered to eliminating the television from the bedroom. Less electricity usage, less space taken up in our room, more time for reading, less distraction when getting ready in the morning, a better example for our kids. Still not quite convinced you should get rid of the TV in your bedroom? Commit to trying it out as a 29-day experiment. Unplugging the television and moving it into a different room will take fewer than 5 minutes. There is an end in sight. You've got nothing to lose and maybe a whole lot to gain. Minimalist home value. Rest. Consider the benefits that rest offers. A healthier body, less stress, deeper relationships, opportunity to evaluate life's direction, a fresh outlook on life, creation of better life balance, and even increased productivity. Any physician will tell you rest is essential for physical health. When the body is deprived of sleep, it is unable to rebuild and recharge itself adequately. Your body requires rest. Any athlete will tell you rest is essential for physical training. Rest is needed for muscles to repair themselves and prevent injury. This is true whether you run marathons, pitch baseballs, or climb rocks. Your muscles require rest. Yesterday's great thinkers will tell you rest is essential for clear thinking. Ovid, the Roman poet, said, "Take rest. A field that has rested gives a bountiful crop." Your mind requires rest. Most religious leaders will tell you rest is essential for spiritual well-being. Buddhism, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, and Baha'i, among others, teach the importance of setting aside a period of time for rest. Your soul requires rest. Many corporate leaders will tell you, similarly, that rest is essential on the job. Rest increases productivity, replenishes attention, solidifies memories, and encourages creativity. Your pursuit of work requires rest. The wise and knowledgeable tell us the same thing. Take time to rest. A minimalist home is one that promotes peace, serenity, relaxation, calmness, and sleep. In other words, rest. And no place in the home is more necessary to rest than the bedroom. Perspectives for minimizing kids' bedrooms. Kids' bedrooms can be some of the trickier places to minimize in the home. Not more tricky physically, more tricky relationally. Kids can benefit as much, if not more, from minimalism as grown-ups can, because they have longer to reap the rewards of good habits after they depart from their childhood home. Can you imagine going back and living life over, not buying all the stuff you're getting rid of today? You may not be able to go back and start again, but your kids can start out right. At the same time, however, as parents, we don't want to force behaviors on our kids in such a way that they come to resent it, possibly contributing to a reaction that's worse than bedroom messiness. We want our kids to feel at home in their rooms, but at the same time, we hope they will choose to incorporate simplicity into their daily living patterns and their self-expression within their rooms. It's tricky, but it's not impossible to navigate successfully among the risks when it comes to minimizing kids' bedrooms. Minimize your own bedroom first. With kids, minimalism is better caught than taught. As parents, we need to be modeling the removal of unneeded possessions and a refusal to buy new stuff that will just waste money and clutter up the home. This means, among other things, that you should declutter the master bedroom first, allowing your kids to see that you're willing to eliminate a bunch of your own personal stuff. When you've done that, you will have more credibility with them when you talk about minimizing their bedrooms. Remember, a kid's bedroom is like his or her home. Kids don't just sleep in their bedrooms. They keep toys and games there and invite friends into their rooms to play. They experiment with their look, trying out different clothes and makeup. They do craft projects or pursue hobbies. They read and study. They may keep a computer there. They like to bring in pets. In a way, they reproduce many of the adult functions of the home in their rooms. So anticipate a diversity of minimizing decisions. Affirm their developing interests and tastes, as well as the comfort they take in having their own private spaces. Just make sure you show them how keeping less stuff in their rooms will make their rooms better homes for them, where they can have even more space to discover who they are. Use physical boundaries to set limits without squelching independence. Boundaries is my term for any limit, physical or numerical, that is placed on the ownership of some category of objects. Boundaries give kids concrete limits while letting them decide how to fill up the allotted space. For example, we tell our daughter Alexa that she can keep whatever art supplies she wants as long as they fit within a storage box we've given her for her room. She gets full control over which items remain and which items go. Other possible boundaries for kids' bedrooms include one cardboard box for toys, one shelf of stuffed animals, or one craft project left out at any given time. Recognize the bedroom TV as what it is, a threat to your child's well-being. As important as getting rid of the TV from the master bedroom is, it's at least as important to do the same in the kids' bedrooms. The average youth spends roughly 900 hours in school each year, and about 1,200 hours a year watching TV. Television viewing is connected to getting less sleep, having worse academic performance, and having higher rates of obesity. So if your child is among the 70% of kids ages 8 to 18 who have a TV set in their room or who watch television via a tablet or a computer in the bedroom, you should at least set a boundary regarding its use. It's probably even better to get rid of that bedroom television altogether. Sweet dreams. I hope you'll dive into minimizing the bedrooms in your house, one by one, with great enthusiasm, because the benefits are huge and the task is achievable. You've already got the principles and steps you need to know to do the job. Before I leave this space, though, I want to return to the most basic purpose of all bedrooms: sleep. We're not getting enough of it. How much sleep should you be getting? The following are recommended amounts of sleep for different age groups according to the National Sleep Foundation. Newborns, 0 to 3 months, 14 to 17 hours per day. Infants, 4 to 11 months, 12 to 15 hours per day. Toddlers, 1 to 2 years, 11 to 14 hours per day. Preschoolers, 3 to 5 years, 10 to 13 hours per day. School-age children, 6 to 13 years, 9 to 11 hours per day. Teenagers, 14 to 17 years, 8 to 10 hours per day. Younger adults, 18 to 25 years, 7 to 9 hours per day. Adults, 26 to 64 years, 7 to 9 hours per day. Older adults, 65 years and older, 7 to 8 hours per day. 40% of people in the United States get less than the recommended amount of sleep, compared to only 11% of people who were sleep deprived in the 1940s. According to surveys, nearly 30% of adults report an average of fewer than 6 hours of sleep per day. And only 31% of high school students report getting at least 8 hours of sleep on an average school night. Among children, research links sleep loss with fatigue, bad moods, attention problems, impaired memory, academic problems, and obesity. The sleep problem today is similar in many countries. The country where people are getting the least shut-eye? Japan. Our world is not good at promoting the virtue of rest. In fact, we foolishly believe we are improving our well-being by skipping out on sleep and rest for the sake of a hurried life. Nor is rest easy to take. Although modern society loves shortcuts, 15-minute abs, 30-minute meals, and one-hour photos, there are no shortcuts or microwave solutions to quality rest. It must be entered deliberately and allowed to complete its cycle in due time. This requires patience and a cleared schedule. A decluttered bedroom is less distracting and more calming, promoting more and better sleep. And a person who wakes up rested is in a better mood and has more energy and concentration to devote to making the most of the day. One underappreciated benefit of minimalism is the ability to walk confidently through your bedroom with the lights off. #minimalist home. Minimizing checklist. How will you know when you've cleared out enough clutter and excess from your bedrooms? Ask yourself these questions. For the master bedroom, does this space foster intimacy with my spouse? Do I get enough rest here? Is this a room I enjoy retreating to at night and waking up to in the morning? For the kids' bedrooms, are the kids comfortable hanging out in their rooms during the day? Are they getting enough sleep at night? For the guest room, is there enough space in my guest room to comfortably accommodate all the belongings my overnight guests bring with them? Is the space relaxing and restful for them? Chapter 5. Iconic. Decluttering the closed closets and mudroom. With just one word, Alice Gregory, a writer living in New York City, forever changed my view of clothing and how much of it to keep around. Writing for J. Crew a few years ago, Alice shared her decision to simplify her wardrobe to one specific style that she would wear every day: a black long-sleeve shirt and fashionable jeans. She called it her uniform. But uniform isn't the word that got me. Amid her reasons for dressing like this, she stated that having a simple outfit you are known for wearing is iconic. It's a cheap and easy way to feel famous. Iconic. That's it. Minimalist clothing can convey a classic and memorable sense of personal identity. Alice argues that wearing a similar outfit every day is a way of asserting your status as a protagonist in life. This is the reason why characters in picture books never change their clothes. Children, like adults, if they'd only admit it, crave continuity. So along with the ease of no longer having to create a new look every day, you have the comfort of feeling like yourself all the time. Another reason for wearing a simplified, iconic wardrobe is that it enables you to step out of the constantly swirling waters of fashion. Is this outdated? Should I get one of those? Do I look good in this? You can forget these worries because, as Gregory said, nobody thinks of a person who wears the same thing every day as unstylish. Rather, it's simply a classification that does not apply. We, of course, live in a world that promotes the opposite approach to clothing. The mantra of the present age is, more is better, newer fashions are superior, and if you are not keeping up with the latest styles and colors, everybody is going to notice. This is the messaging we see reflected in ads, in store windows, and on television almost every day. The prevalent attitude to fashion is downright silly, if you think about it. As Henry David Thoreau said long ago, Every generation laughs at the old fashions, but follows religiously the new. In most cases, it is classic fashion, not the trending pieces and colors, that stands the test of time. In his later years, Albert Einstein usually wore the same suit. Steve Jobs favored a black turtleneck, jeans, and sneakers. Mark Zuckerberg likes to wear a gray t-shirt. Their reputations certainly didn't take a hit because they simplified their wardrobe decisions. Well, those are all men. Could it be different for women? Evidently not. Alice Gregory is doing fine with her iconic wardrobe. Similarly, Matilda Call, an art director for a leading New York ad agency, wears the same style of clothing to work every day and says it simplifies her morning routine while leveling the playing field with her male colleagues. My good friend Courtney Carver minimized her wardrobe down to a capsule set with only 33 items. She wore those same pieces over the course of several months and told me recently, not a single person noticed, despite the fact that I worked at a high-end fashion magazine and my story was covered extensively by the Associated Press. Not a single person ever raised even a question. I'm not asking you to wear the same thing every day, nor am I asking you to get rid of that pair of jeans that fit so perfectly, or the dress you love to wear when you go out dancing. But I am suggesting that you can radically thin out the clothes in your home's closets. Your own, your kids, and the mudroom or coat closet by the door. And that it will not only make your house more attractive and efficient, but also make you feel more at ease. A better closet. If you have a tendency to overbuy clothing, the evidence is before you every time you go to your closet, with clothes on hangers shoved so closely together that they are hard to separate, rows or piles of shoes on the floor, and sweatshirts and sweaters threatening to spill off the overhead shelves. Or check out your kids' closets. How many clothes do they have in there? And how many other items, such as toys and games? Then there's the place where you keep coats. Is yours a place you would feel comfortable using to hang up a guest's coat while she looks on? Or is it embarrassingly overstuffed with the family's own coats, boots, hats, gloves, and scarves? Now, I know that in those home makeover shows we see on TV, one of the biggest complaints about an existing home is that the closets are too small. There's a reason why older homes have smaller clothes closets than new ones. People used to get by just fine with fewer clothes. So is the answer to buy a newer house with large closets? Or is it to reduce the number of clothes so that our wardrobes will fit in the closet space we already have? If you've been thinking you need bigger closets, maybe all you need to do is right-size your wardrobe and your closets will feel bigger overnight. In new homes today, closet space, on average, accounts for 146 square feet. Although people used to be satisfied with reach-in closets, now there's a demand for walk-in closets, with a majority of home buyers willing to pay extra to get them. Quite literally, some of us have closets as large as the size of many homes in poor countries. And in order to find the clothes they want out of the vast abundance of their wardrobe in their oversized closets, some people resort to installing closet organizing systems that cost hundreds or even thousands of dollars. I'm not trying to lay guilt on you if you have large closets. I'm trying to help us all think that maybe we don't need more clothes or more closet space. Maybe the closet space in our current home, whatever it happens to be, is enough if we will just reduce the quantity of our clothing to a more reasonable level. And if we choose to downsize to a smaller home at some future time, then the smaller closet space it comes with will be just right. Consider how different your life will look when you own fewer clothes. You will have more time to live your life. Fewer clothes means less time getting ready. It also means less time shuffling through piles of sweaters, moving hangers full of clothes, or trying on different pairs of shoes to find the coordinating pair. Mornings will feature less stress. Not only will getting ready become easier and require less time, but you'll also eliminate the often overlooked anxiety of peering into a full closet and wondering what clothes you should pick out, or staring at all the clothes you feel guilty for purchasing but never wearing, or wish you could fit into but haven't been the right size for in a long time. Packing for business trips and vacations will take less time. The clothes themselves will keep in better shape. An uncluttered closet is less likely to cause shoes to be stepped on, let dust accumulate on clothing, and create wrinkles. As you maintain a minimized wardrobe over time, buying fewer clothes will result in you having more disposable income. Even if you choose to purchase higher quality clothing in the future, you could still end up ahead in the pocketbook. Go a different route with your clothing. Try owning fewer pieces. Contrary to what you've heard, you just don't need to buy and own a lot of clothes. Inspiration, Selena's story. Order behind the wardrobe doors. My wardrobes used to be chaos. Things were everywhere. I'd place clothes wherever I could fit them, often just on my dresser or piled up rather than hung up. I could never find what I was looking for, and if I did, it almost always had to be re-ironed because the clothes were shoved in so tight. I used to have this idea that if I just shut the wardrobe doors, I could pretend it was all okay. But every time I opened my wardrobe, I was reminded that it wasn't. The physical space reflected my mental chaos, or maybe it was contributing to it. Either way, I knew I needed a change. I minimized my closet last year. I grabbed some black bags and started in one corner of my closet. I sorted my clothes into yes, no, and maybe piles. Yes items stayed, no items went, and when I finished, I also decided that my entire maybe pile would be donated to charity. I found I built momentum as I began to get rid of things and kept going. The more I got rid of, the more decisive I became. It's unbelievable how the process has affected my mood each morning and evening. I spend much less time cleaning, and my dresser is clear. It means I can actually sit down at my dresser and get ready peacefully. I now have a clear chair, too, so I can lay out my clothes for the next day, the night before, which makes morning decisions easier. Less time stressing about clothes and ironing has left me extra time in the morning, which I can now spend on reading, meditation, or a slower breakfast. It's nice having space, both physically and mentally, to center my day before it even begins. Selena, England. If you need nice things to impress your friends, you have the wrong friends. Hashtag minimalist home. Who says we need changing fashion anyway? A few months after I started my minimalism journey, a headline on my computer caught my attention. Top 10 colors define a season of change. According to the article, the fall 08 palette is best described as a season of change and is defined by rich, elegant hues that offer a vibrant selection. New York's fashion designers emphasize cooler blues, greens, and purples in the top 5 tones used in their collections, followed by variations of warm red, orange, and yellow. I wondered, who gets to decide what the must-have colors are going to be for fall 2008? I mean, is there a committee somewhere that makes these kinds of decisions? Does it just so happen that a large number of people are enthusiastically drawn to the same colors at the same time? Or is there something else happening here? Is this an orchestrated effort? It occurred to me that if I were running the fashion industry, it would be helpful for me to change the in-fashion colors and styles often. This way, people would have to buy new clothes to keep up with the trends, which would result in more money flowing into my industry. All parts of the supply chain would benefit: designers, manufacturers, retailers, and anyone else who makes a living off the selling of clothes. This is just what's happening. If the fashion industry wasn't intentionally telling us that our old clothes were out of style, we'd probably stop buying their product. After all, we already have enough clothes in our closet to last quite some time. The U.S. apparel industry today is a $12 billion business, and the average American family spends $1,700 on clothes annually. On average, that's 3.5% of a family's expenses. Arguably not much, but what's more significant is whether that money is spent on need or waste. The answer largely is waste. Americans throw away 13 million tons of textiles each year, accounting for 9% of total non-recycled waste. It hasn't always been like that. Our appetite for clothing is demonstrably growing. According to Forbes, in 1930, the average American woman owned 9 outfits. In 2015, that figure was 30 outfits, one for every day of the month. The same trend is occurring in Britain, where in 2006, women bought twice as many clothes as they had just 10 years earlier. The Daily Mail reports that the average woman in the United Kingdom has 22 items in her closet that she will never wear but refuses to throw out. Among its other drawbacks, the practice of overbuying clothes is expensive. About half of U.S. women have between $1,000 and $5,000 worth of clothing and shoes in their closets. The fashion magazine that reported these numbers also said a lucky 9% report having apparel and accessories that total over $10,000. Lucky? Well, that's one way to look at it. These same women also have over $10,000 less in their savings accounts. Incredibly to me, one study revealed women have fashion on the brain 91 times in a given day. That's more than 4 times the amount that men think about sex. I don't mean to pick on women. Men make too much of fashion and hang on to too many clothes as well. I should know, because when I became a minimalist, I got rid of an embarrassing number of my own items of clothing. Ties dating back to the previous decade, if not century. Dress clothes that we might wear if we have the right sort of business meeting. Shoes for more occasions than we'll ever actually encounter. Men can be clothes hoarders just as much as women. So I have to ask, is all this clothes buying and storing benefiting our lives in any way? In his well-known book, The Paradox of Choice, Barry Schwartz argued that it is not. He said, freedom and autonomy are critical to our well-being, and choice is critical to freedom and autonomy. Nonetheless, though modern Americans have more choice than any group of people ever has had before, and thus presumably more freedom and autonomy, we don't seem to be benefiting from it psychologically. His argument, stated throughout the book and reproduced in studies, is that more choice does not mean better living. As choice increases, so does paralysis of decision. Ever stare into a full closet of clothes and still have no idea what to wear? As options increase, so does the sense of bewilderment and frustration. Additionally, an abundance of choice often results in less satisfaction and sometimes poorer decisions. It would seem from everything we've been told that more clothes hanging in our closets would lead to a happier life. But psychologically and scientifically, that is simply not the case. In fact, often, more choice leads to less happiness. The paradox of choice. Not to mention the unending frustration of having to keep up with the ever-changing trends. Maybe getting our money makes the leaders of the fashion industry happy, but buying excessive quantities of their products isn't doing the same for us. Running with the cool kids. Sometimes the reason we buy more clothes than we need doesn't have to do with external forces or advertisements. Sometimes the reason is internal. In high school, I played tennis, and my favorite class was accounting. I found out pretty early that the tennis team didn't get invited to many parties. Neither did the accountants, unfortunately. On the other hand, my twin brother was a star on the football team, the basketball team, and the track team, and his social life reflected his status. He was a popular figure at those parties I never got into. I had plenty of free time while sitting alone at home to long for the day when being one of the cool kids didn't matter. Some days I think I'm still waiting. And apparently, I'm not the only one. One day, I was in a clothing store with my wife because I needed new pants. I was not the only one using the dressing rooms. In fact, I wasn't even the only one asking my wife for her opinion. As I emerged from one of the dressing rooms wearing a khaki pair of pants, I noticed a young female shopper striking up a conversation with my wife. The shopper began, "Do you think this shirt looks good on me? I think it looks a little boxy." "Yeah, you're right. It does look a little boxy on you," my wife answered. The young woman went on, "Yeah, I know. It's just that everybody is wearing this style now. Honestly, I just like wearing t-shirts and jeans. I really don't know what to do." In my mind, the answer was simple. It doesn't matter what everyone else is wearing. Buy the type of clothing you like best. Spend your money on something you really love and need, not the current fashion trends in the magazines, especially if you don't feel like yourself in them. But I know it's not always that easy. The pull toward conformity can be strong. The desire to fit in with popular culture is significant at times, as is the desire to impress others with our clothing. And no matter how old we get, the desire to run with the cool kids can remain. But I believe that within each of us is a desire that's even stronger. The desire to be ourselves, to embrace the things we love and enjoy and that make us unique. One of the best decisions we can make is to reject the cultural expectations that change with the wind, and to accept the fact that we don't need to run with the cool kids to be happy. We can choose to be ourselves instead. Our clothes can be a reflection of that. Creating an anti-Diderot effect. Named for an 18th century French philosopher, the Diderot effect describes the tendency for one purchase to lead to others. We see this effect in operation in many places around the home. First a dog, then a bunch of dog supplies. First a fishing pole, then tackle boxes full of fishing gear. Perhaps the place in our homes where we most clearly see the Diderot effect operating is in our wardrobes, as clothing purchases lead to other clothing or accessory purchases. I'm going to have to get shoes to match this suit. I really need a new necklace to go with this new top. It's almost a reflex. One purchase leads to another. Minimalism enables us to reverse this trend. If you reduce the number of your clothes and are keeping fewer colors and styles, this automatically reduces the number of accessories that match your look. It works the other way too. Reduce the number of your accessories, and that will help you decide to get rid of the clothes that require the accessories you've removed. Step-by-step minimizing for your clothes closets. Whether you are hoping to reduce your clothing to a uniform or just trying to pare down your wardrobe to gain more efficiency, now's the time to give your crowded closet a break. Get ready to ask about the contents of your closets. Do I really need this? Step 1. Consider removing non-clothes items. Sometimes, whether for convenience or by accident, non-clothes items collect in our clothes closets. Toys littering the floor of a kid's closet, hockey sticks leaned against the inside wall of a coat closet, a wedding album resting on a shelf in the master bedroom closet. Having things other than clothes in your closets is fine, if that's what you want. But take a look at what you've got in the closets and see if some items might belong better in other parts of the house, such as toys in the toy room or sports gear on the garage shelves. As before, relocate such items. Now you're ready to tackle the main thing, your clothes. Step 2. Set a goal for your clothing reduction. Do you want to remove a quarter of your clothing? Maybe a third? According to the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals, most people wear 20% of the clothes they own 80% of the time. The Pareto Principle in action. You don't need to get rid of 80% of your clothing the first time through your closet, but knowing this statistic, surely you can get rid of a lot, couldn't you? Step 3. Categorize your clothing and start giving things away. Three types of clothing usually make up our wardrobes. The clothes we love to wear, the clothes we never wear, the clothes we kind of like and wear occasionally. Notice the style and color of the clothes you naturally tend to reach for in the closet. These must be the clothes you feel more comfortable and confident in, right? So begin to create your iconic fashion style around those pieces. On the other hand, if an item of clothing in your closet doesn't fit you anymore, you don't like it, or you don't remember the last time you wore it, don't hesitate, get rid of it. I'm not saying that you couldn't see yourself conceivably wearing it at some point, but if you haven't actually been wearing it, then it's unlikely you would wear it much in the future either, and there's little point in keeping it around. This brings us to the questionable pieces in your closet, those that you rarely wear but aren't sure you're ready to part with. Let me say this. Probably it would be better if you got rid of the majority of these clothes. But I know it can be hard to decide. And so to help you figure out which ones to keep and which ones to remove, try this fun experiment. Turn around all the hangers in your closet so the open side of the handle is facing toward you. When you return a piece of clothing that you've worn to a hanger, place it back on the rod with the handle curving away from you so you know at a glance you've worn this piece. After a set period of time, remove every article of clothing on a hanger that is still pointing toward you. You may want to consider 1 or 2 months as a good time for your current season's clothes. And then start the experiment again once a new season begins. These are the clothes you haven't worn since you started the experiment. I guess you really don't need them, do you? By the way, I would strongly discourage you from removing clothes belonging to your spouse without permission. Clothes preferences are highly personal. Minimize your own side of the closet and leave it up to your spouse to decide what to get rid of from his or her own wardrobe. The same advice holds for older children. Encourage teens to minimize their closets, but let them make the choices themselves. Praise them when they choose to let go of unneeded pieces. With younger children, you can be more directive. Create a clothing boundary. For example, say, you can have as many hanging clothes as will conveniently fit on this one rod. You choose what they are. Or, let's pick 10 things from your closet that you want to donate today. Step 4. Keep only one size, the size that fits you now. If you've gained weight, should you keep your older, smaller clothes as motivation to reduce weight? Courtney Carver said, "Multiple sizes may feel like a safety net, but they may also be a painful reminder of how you feel in your own skin. There's no proof that smaller sizes encourage you to lose weight, and the stress of trying could even contribute to weight gain. Keep one size in your closet, and take a walk with the extra time you save in the morning when deciding what to wear." Step 5. Reduce your accessories. It's not just hanging clothes you need to thin out from your closets. There are also the hats, shoes, belts, purses, ties, scarves, gloves, jewelry, and other items you use to accessorize your look. We tend to accumulate a lot of these, especially as they are frequent gifts. Eventually, our set of accessories can go from being a treasured but limited collection to rivaling a department store display table full of items we never wear. Apply the same love to use, never use, and occasionally use categories to your accessories, getting rid of all the never used and as many of the occasionally used accessories as you can. If you've already reduced the number of your clothes and are keeping fewer colors and styles, this automatically reduces the number of accessories that match your look and thus will help you decide which pieces to get rid of. In fact, you might consider going the other way and using your accessories to help you decide which items of clothing to get rid of. For example, when I minimized my closet, I decided to sharply reduce my number of accessories by keeping only one color, black. I removed all my brown belts and shoes and watches. With this new baseline accessory color, I kept only clothes that matched black accessories. The same strategy could also work for jewelry. You don't need a bunch of duplicates in all these categories. Limit your accessories, and then you can more easily limit your clothes and have easier decisions when making new clothing purchases. I know this is the opposite of the way many of us think about clothing and accessories. We pick the clothes first and then get accessories to match. But then, minimalism is contrarian by nature. The shirt off your back. Stacy is a 35-year-old wife and mother of two who made a decision to simplify her life and begin focusing on things that matter. After I finished a speaking engagement, she approached me to tell her story. "I've done very well, Joshua. I've slowly worked through most of the rooms in my home, throwing out most of my husband's stuff," she said with a laugh and a smile. "No, honestly, I've done well and I'm proud of my progress. Except for one area of my home. I felt frozen and stuck, contemplating the idea of removing clothes and shoes from the closet. I have always prided myself on being current with fashions and styles, and working through that area of my home was always going to be difficult. That was until the week before we met." She continued with her story. "Just last week, I was driving downtown toward work and noticed something I had never seen before. Our local battered women's shelter was not all that far from my corporate office park, and yet I had never noticed it before. As I thought about the facility, my mind raced to the women who called it home. It occurred to me that within those walls were dozens of women, many of whom had probably left their homes in the middle of the night with nothing but the clothes on their backs and their children in their arms.